Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance neath the cover of October skies. With all the leaves on the
What's up? What's everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. And he was in hiding. I thought I missed him. I don't know what happened to him, but I dug around and I found him. My man, the big angry redhead, Dan Stesich from Athena Private Wealth. Welcome back, Dan. Where you been, big boy?
just hiding from you, Todd. If you ever need a second career, private eye might be the thing. No, I've just been here and there, and our schedules haven't been crossing lately. That's all.
Yeah, I know. So Dan, you know, we talk about a lot of things all the time, and you know, your mental basis, your trading basis is always more around the fundamental look of the market. Now I'm more of a technical kind of guy, but. Somehow we, you know, at some point we'll reach the same conclusion. But what are you seeing now, just in general? What is your general overview of the market activity and what's going on?
Well, I'm a little bit bewildered as to how the market is keeping the strength that it is. You know, all year I've been on the sidelines keeping positions I have, which I still am now. And I was attributing a lot of the problems in the first quarter to weather. Well, the first quarter's behind us. We're starting to get April numbers, and they're a mixed bag at best right now, and this market keeps staying near its near record highs here, and that kind of disturbs me some. I'm not quite ready to get out, but if I see continued weakness in the economic data going forward, I'm going to have to really reassess where I'm at.
So, you know, again, one of your big numbers is the ISM. So how has that been reacting, and what's your take on that number?
Well, you know, that's the one bright spot. It both the manufacturing and non-manufacturing. The manufacturing came in a little lower than expected, but it's still in the growth phase. The non-manufacturing ISM is coming in the high 50s, which is historically very strong. So I'm not sure where this disconnect is coming, because all of the government data is not showing anything really good. Retail sales, the other day wasn't that good. The employment numbers, surprisingly enough, that's been the one bright spot, but everything else has started to fade.
So are you still in the camp that the employment numbers are good, even though the wages are not increasing and we're really just bringing in more minimum wage jobs? Is that good by you?
Yeah, good's a relative thing. They're better, and actually they're much better than they have been. But remember, our base of operations was terrible. So what you have to look at in these numbers, and we're still, despite the fact we've been, you know, supposedly out of recession for how many years now, it still doesn't feel like we are, and the employment situation now is acting like an economy that's been 3 to 6 months out of its recession. So it's not growing fast enough, but it is showing signs of recovering.
Okay, now again, I always like to ask this question because I really don't see the growth, but I'm not saying you're wrong. I want you to tell me and the listeners, where is the growth that you're seeing?
Well, you know, just based, aside from what we see in the numbers, anecdotal growth, I'm hearing from my union friends, and I have a few, that all their jobs are being filled. A lot of guys are going back to work that have been on the sideline for a long time. That's a good sign, especially when it's union work, because that's some of the last stuff to start being reemployed because of the cost of it. And then, you know, just the anecdotal evidence, you see small business hiring plans are going up a bit. And again, this isn't any great shakes, but it is improvement.
Okay, so what is it going to take to see some real improvement? What's going to get Dan back in there full bore?
I want to see economic data that doesn't fit and stop like it has been. You know, last year we had the first quarter, which was terrible. Second and third quarter were terrific. Third quarter or fourth quarter, so-so. First quarter this year, terrible, probably going to be worse on the first revision. And so I want to see what we saw last year in the second and third quarter continue for 3, 4, 5 quarters, not just 1, 2, and then step back again. It just shows that the economy, I shouldn't say the economy, that we don't have a lot of confidence right now in what's going on in our country.
So, you know, looking at the overall view of the country and looking at what's going on, you know, we've got problems everywhere. And starting out with, you know, gasoline and oil. Oil went down and everybody, you know, said, you know, after it went down. And, of course, you had all the great predictions of oil's going down to zero, basically. And, of course, we see oil spiking up. And unfortunately, for the consumer, gas prices have gone up much faster than the price of oil has recovered, although it's rallied. So where did all that money that they thought everybody was going to save go? And how does that bode for the overall economy as well?
You know, that's a really good question. And you, I would give credit for as being one of the few people out there saying people aren't going to spend that money. And it turns out they didn't. They've saved the money. So I don't know. And again, that boils back down to the question of why don't we have confidence in this economy, in this country right now? And until you start seeing that, until people feel secure enough to go spending that extra money they have, and that wasn't to pay down debt. That went into their savings. So that's a big difference there right now, which means they're squirreling away for another rainy day.
Now, do you think that, is in your mind, is there a rainy day on the horizon?
If we don't see some economic growth in the next month and a half, 2 months, yes.
Okay, now, obviously, we're coming into a much slower time of year for a lot of things. Obviously, busy for some, slower for others. But generally, you know, if you're at the retail level, margins are lower in the summer. You know, if you're in, obviously, in other things, you know, we do see, you know, the summer is the time of sales and things like that. Of course, people do some more traveling. But what's it going to take for Dan Stessa to say, this is it, I see it? How long, how many quarters is it? Are you 3 quarters away from getting bullish, real bullish again? Or are you a quarter away? What's your you know, long-term overview here?
I'm between 2 and 3 quarters, probably towards the 3-quarter end, because, you know, it's hard to make an assessment on it, but I want to see what the second, third, and fourth quarter do relative to everything. I don't want to see a second quarter 4% growth, third quarter 4% growth, and then a fourth quarter of 1.5% growth, because that means to me, again, we're not out of it. And how we're not getting out of it is just truly disturbing. But if I see these numbers continue to grow for the next 3 quarters, and that's a long time off, then I jump back into the real bullish camp. In the meantime, I'm just going to sit on the sideline. I really am not investing any new money unless I see some drastic value out there. And right now, short of energy price or energy companies, I don't see any.
And you did see drastic value in John Deere, which you bought at the year low, and I think it's up about for you probably about 15% from where you bought it.
Yeah, that did another one. You know, another one I did buy was Halliburton. That got nailed down to 37, and I bought that around 39. And I still like that stock. I also like it. There's a couple oil companies, ConocoPhillips, ExxonMobil, Schlumberger, those type of companies. Because, like everything, with John Deere, I didn't buy because I thought we had some screaming global economy. I bought because I thought it was way overdone to the downside, just as I do these three energy companies are way to the downside. So that's what you have to wait for, is for a company to get undervalued for whatever reason it is. When they go down hard. And generally too far. That's where you can pick up some value.
Well, you know, we're going to get ready to talk about stuff out here for a break here, but I want you to think about this while we go out for our break, and that is, isn't it typical, especially in the commodities markets, but isn't it typical of markets in general to typically go one way or another too far? Because what happens is everybody loads in, and of course, you've always got the late money push, whether it be up or the downside. And they come in, and of course, they turn around on a dime, and they make what we call the V formation here on the Bubba Show, and they ram them up everybody's ass. But that's something for you to think about. This is the Bubba Show. You can hear that Dan is on the floor, and there's some action going on. We'll be back after the break. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horace. Make sure you check out the Bubba Report. Can be yours for $99 a year. Check it out at thebubbashow.org. We'll be right back after the break with Dan Stessa from Athena Private Wealth. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horace hanging out with the big angry redhead, my friend, and went from trader to now investment advisor and does a hell of a job at advising and helping clients move along for Athena Private Wealth. 847-299-8877. You ever want to give him a call and check him out? So, Dan, as we were going to break, I said, what's the deal? Where are we going? And your answer is?
Well, you know, as far as where we're going, we're just kind of muddling along. But you were talking about how stocks, commodities, everything goes a little too far. And I guess the best illustration of it, and you're true on all counts, whether it be a stock, an equity or a commodity, the market does run too far to one side. And oil will be a good example for it. You had oil going down, and when it was down into the 40s, everybody's saying, oh, it's going down to the 20s, and everybody else is starting to pile on. And all of a sudden, boom, it's right back up to 50 and now near 60, and nobody had any inclination that it was going to happen. And it's just because you have that fear and that pile-on trade, which is similar to what we see in the equities and we saw in John Deere, we saw in Halliburton. Everybody thinks the world's going to end on these. Unless there's some serious fundamental shift within the company, it's not going to end. They're going to have a short period of problems, but generally they grow out of them. And if you use this type of advice over the past 5 or 6 years, you could have done real well. There's some companies out that jumped 4 and 5 times what they were on their lows. I think Starbucks was down below $10 at one point at the depths of the crisis because, you know, back then everything was going to go to zero.
And now it's over 100 if you take the split adjusted. But Bubba had oil pegged right? Just, you know, and Bubba took Al Halliburton on Fox Business live at $38. But anyways, so Dan, what's going on in your client base right now? What are your guys thinking? What are you guys looking at right now? What kind of things are you doing, or are you doing anything for your long-term investors?
Well, you know, one of the biggest difficulties when you talk with clients is they see the stock market running at these great clips, and they wonder, well, how come I'm not meeting those same objectives? Well, it's because we don't have 100% in the stocks. It's important, and we have to remind our clients continually to have a well-balanced portfolio and to meet regularly with either your advisor or somebody else to determine whether or not you have the proper mix. So, you know, we had some great runs in the stock market, but very few people caught those runs unless you're purely a stock trader. So when you look at your book, and this is what we'll tell everybody, you have to use a prudent approach. What are you thinking about? What's your timeline? We've talked about this in the past. Are you in your 30s, your 20s, your 40s, your 70s, or your 80s? And that determines where you go. The younger you are, the more risk you can take. But when you take more risk, you have to be willing to stomach some of the bad things that are going to happen out there. As you get towards your twilight years and you're looking towards retirement, you want to get out of the risk assets and protect your money so that you can live comfortably for the balance of your time here on Earth.
Now, are you worried about, you know, we see margin debt at record highs, okay? Are you worried about that at all? Because you see, the difference is, let me just explain this before I let you answer the question. When you're dealing with a guy like Dan, he's looking out as a long-term, more like an endowment type of model. They mix up their asset classes so that you're not stuck in one spot, so you're not totally dependent on whether the stock market goes up or the bond market does well. You're mixed, which is why you won't otherwise get the returns, but your returns will be much more consistent. The swing within your accounts will be much lighter. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. That's dead on.
Okay, so when you're dealing in this environment, you can't look at each and every day, and that, I think that's one of the things that's really driven the markets to a new frenzy, because everybody's got their cell phone, everybody's looking at the market. You know, guys that never look at the market ever in their life are now looking at every 20 minutes on their iPhone or, you know, their Android, whatever it is. But when you look forward here now, do you see this margin debt being a problem? Do you see too many people chasing in for yield? I mean, I'm worried. And I want to hear your answer, but then I'll tell you why I'm worried.
Well, absolutely. You know, it goes with what we were talking about, how markets go too far one way or the other. Not markets, individual stocks and commodities go too far one way or the other. And when people are putting on heavy margin, is they're jumping on with money they really don't have. They're borrowing money thinking that, oh, this is going to keep going, and I want to buy the rally. Well, what happens when it doesn't? If it turns, if the market all of a sudden fundamentally sees, hey, these valuations aren't right, the market starts dropping, and then all these margins start getting called in, and that exacerbates itself. You get this snowball running downhill, and you can have some serious problems. So this also is a problem for my clients, too. Not so much that they have margin debt on, because most of them don't, but when they see these big snowballing action, either to the upside first, they see all this movement, and then to the downside, they start panicking. And one of the things people tend to do when the markets start getting pummeled real hard is pull their money out. It's probably the worst thing you can do. So you have to look at your time frame and your time horizon to be able to withstand those problems. So in answer to your question about margin debt, it does concern me. And I try to keep ahead of the curve. I don't know what's going to trigger it, but I think what will do it is if we don't see proper economic growth in this economy, you're going to see a turnaround and you're going to see a lot of profit taking.
And I would agree with that. And what I'm worried about, Dan, and this fits up in your alley. Now, again, you guys don't do that. And this is one of the things about having a professional manage and watch after your portfolio is I'm worried that there's a lot of people out there that work their ass off their whole lives to save money and figure that they could put away, you know, let's say $500,000. Okay. And they hope that they could, you know, at worst case, you put the money in the bank at 4 or 5% and you add that to your pension or your Social Security, that gives you enough to live on. But now they have to go out and chase yield. And of course that puts their principal at risk because, you know, every expert, you know, this or so-called expert, because you're an expert and I don't call you so-called. I call you an expert, but a lot of guys I hear on air are so-called experts because they keep pitching stock market when the stock market is not even the biggest market in the world. So, but now, are you worried about that? Because, you know, people chasing that yield that need that money to live, I mean, what's that going to do to the overall economy when the yield stops and they can't go anywhere and they've lost 30 or 40% of their money?
Well, that is going to be a problem. You do have people in our business, in my business particularly, people go, well, I want to get a little more yield out of what I've got in there. And you do have to put them into riskier assets, because like if you put it in a savings account now, what do you get, a tenth of a percent at that? You're not getting any money. So then you look to treasuries, a 10-year is paying 2.7 right now, a 30-year is paying 3.05. That's still on the relatively low side. And these things can drop in value. So as you get into these riskier assets, if things start falling apart, that can happen too. Now, if you're comfortable carrying it till the end, whatever the term is, whatever the maturity level is, and you want to take that income stream in, you're going to be fine. But the thing is, here it goes again, you can't panic when these things drop. And they do drop. Everything can drop for the most part, some more so than the other. And the further you go along on the risk curve, the more volatility you're going to get in them.
And that is correct. And that's one of the problems, which goes back to margin debt, because we know margin debt in one sense for sure means that more people are borrowing more money to put in the stock market. Now, some people say, well, it's just cheap money. But margin debt, if you can't afford it, there is no money cheap enough if you can't afford the movement in the stock, equity, or whatever you're trading. Is that correct?
No, that's absolutely right. You know, anything above zero costs you money. And when this thing starts bolting down, see, not only do you have to repay your margin debt, if you bought a stock at 60 in the hopes of it going to 80, but it's now dropped to 40, you got to repay that $20 difference there, plus the money you owe on that you borrowed out. So it can become a very, very big problem. You really don't want to step beyond your bounds. If you don't feel comfortable with a stock position on, just a raw position, don't put it on.
Right, because again, it comes back to the ability to afford what's going to happen next and where you're going to go next. Again, you have to remember, and this is important for all investors out there, remember the principal is it. And you have to determine what percentage of the principal that you are willing to lose if you're going to chase yield and you're going to leverage. Because if you take margin debt, the reason that Bear Stearns and Lehman Brothers were allowed to fail in the collapse of 2008 was because their margin debt, their leverage was too high. So they weren't worth saving based on the model that the Federal Reserve had built. So they basically said, screw you. You guys are at too much of a risk. Of course, Lehman and Bear Stearns were leveraged at about 40-1. But did you know that the Federal Reserve today, as of today, is leveraged at 75 times to 1?
So I didn't know it was that high, and it was high though.
It is high, and it's a problem. And we're going to address some more of these problems because I think it's important. And I know Dan will tell you a little bit more about Athena when we come back as well, because they offer some services that you don't have to pay for. You can kind of take them for a test drive and see how you like them. And Dan will tell us more about that when we come back from the break. This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. Make sure you check it out. There's a lot of great articles. And most of the time you'll see that we're writing about things before they happen. And that's part of being on the Bubba Show. TheBubbaShow.org, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll be right back after the break. What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here. The long-awaited Bubba Report. Bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialady, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report.
Trust. For nearly four decades, that is the reputation Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has forged with their customers. Now, with their full e-commerce website, rrbi.co, it's easier than ever to buy or sell precious metals via Bitcoin or major credit card. Visit them online at rrbi.co or call 800-874-9760 to speak with an experienced professional today. Roberts & Roberts, when you're serious about precious metals.
Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz hanging out with my man, the big angry boy, the big angry redhead, Dan Stesage from Athena Private Wealth. So, Dan, tell me a little bit about those types of things and how important it is to make sure that you are protecting capital, which is the way that you guys invest. And also tell us about, you know, I know you were offering a free look at your 401k or your IRA or things like that.
Yeah, if you go on to our website, athenaprivatewealth.com, we have a few different ways you can contact us, whether it's be in person or look at some of these programs that we offer on the computer that you can do yourself. If you decide you like it, there'll be a little fee for it. But if you want to talk to a partner or any of the advisors over there, and that's sometimes the best thing to do, is to talk to somebody one-on-one. Might seem intimidating, but it really shouldn't be, because we're going to give you an assessment of what you have. There's no charge for that right off. But if you decide to use us going forward, we can develop a plan for you and let you be comfortable. We kind of think of it as we will worry for you at night so you can sleep. So come to talk to somebody. And if it's not us, it's somebody else. You should really talk to somebody. Look at your overall portfolio, where you are in your life, and where you think you're going to be when you're ready to retire financially, and go forward with a plan. Because it's easy to start putting it off saying, oh, that's this many years off, that many years off. But the reality is, the quicker you start a comprehensive plan to lead you out of retirement, lead you into retirement, the better off you're going to be.
Well, I can tell you one thing. If you think it's a long way off, before you know it, it'll be here. And you'll be wondering what happened when you're working at Walmart because you didn't take care of it when you were younger. So,
absolutely.
And there's nothing wrong with working at Walmart, but I mean, I don't think anybody wants to be working into their 70s and 80s because they have to work because they can't afford to live. I think that's something that we all take for granted. You know, I mean, listen, I'm one of the perfect guys who took things for granted years ago because I never thought they'd turn the faucet off. And, of course, in a year from now, there'll be no trading floor whatsoever. So, you know, you have to always look forward into the future. And if you go back to the days, Dan, you remember Flash Gordon, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
And the Jetsons. I mean, you know, think about some of the things they're doing in those shows. Those shows were 50 years ago or 60 years ago. And a lot of things they were doing are happening right now today. So don't think that it can't happen and you got to be ready to go. So, Dan, you know, I want to talk. I know you don't cover a lot of the grain and cattle markets and things like that, but I'm just curious. I know you're a consumer. Now, we see cattle prices that are through the roof. And
yeah.
I'm from the school that I understand that there's a little bit of a shortage, there's a drought, there's some problems. But I'm from the school that eventually the supply will build on its own naturally, because the average American cannot go out and buy a steak anyways now because of the prices.
No, absolutely not. It's funny you mentioned it. I was at the store yesterday looking at the price of the beef. My wife normally does the shopping, and she has a better handle on it. And when I come home, I tell her, I said, holy cow, a steak is this much a pound. She goes, been like that for a long time. And it is shocking, but supply-demand works into it. And I just read an article, I don't know, within the past few days, about there are more cattle on the lots now. They're starting to see the inventory or the herds increase. So you have two things. Prices are high, so farmers are willing to put more into whatever product it is. In this case, it happens to be cattle. So those prices should come off a bit. And, you know, it's just same thing. You go into a store, you see a steak for $10 a pound, and next to it's a pork chop for $1.79 a pound. And pork chops aren't as good as steak, but I'll have one of those.
Yeah, it's, and you go have a chicken for 39 cents a pound, right, with the Asian,
exactly.
With the avian flu. But
right.
But I mean, again, people, the bottom line is, and this is, I think, one of the bigger problems in the economy that nobody is really recognizing, nobody's talking about, is that the average American, the middle class American, they're the ones that really support the economy. Do you agree?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because they're the ones that do the spending. You look, the rich, and I've said this with other guests, and I'm curious your opinion. The rich will always spend. They're not, listen, the rich, listen, now they have so much money now, they just had a $1 billion art auction at wherever the hell that was, and they sold a Picasso for $179 million. Can you imagine a guy who can afford to buy $179 million Picasso as an alternative asset class?
It does seem kind of ridiculous. He's going to be hosed on that eventually. But he doesn't care.
Yeah, because Picasso can't die again. But so, right. but so you know, you see that, and of course, the entitled, the poor, they're always entitled, and they spend basically every dime they get in, which is why they get aid. But the middle class, they're not really buying a lot of stuff. They're certainly not. They certainly don't really have the ability to finance a lot of stuff unless they want to play usury rates. Because it's very hard unless you're buying a car, because those guys, they have a way to hide in the higher interest rate with their 0% finances. You pay an effective rate of 6 or 7%. Okay. So without the middle class, I can't see retail sales recovering. I can't see a lot of things coming back because I don't see them spending. And you said it yourself earlier today that even when they saved a little bit of money on gas for that short period of time, they weren't spending it. They were putting it away or paying off their own debt. So where do we go?
Yeah, that's absolutely true. It is going to have to be the middle class that carries us out of it. I mean, the middle class is far and away the biggest portion of our economy. And without that, then you're not going to see anything. Like you say, the rich can do whatever they want. They don't have to worry about it. The poor are protected to an extent. But the middle class is the one that is really feeling the pinch of this stuff. Gas prices have been favorable, but like you said, are we spending it? No, we're not. We're saving it. Even with commodity prices coming off, and they have come off a little bit, it's still not helping us out. We need to see a more vibrant economy on a consistent basis, not just for two quarters, and then we step back for two.
So, you know, it's interesting. Now we're in this sixth year of a market that's up 200% from the bottom. Now, we know, we talked about this, that they overdid it to the downside, which they always do. In your mind, in your eyes, have they overdone it to the upside yet?
No, they haven't. And here's why. I'll use year 2000 as my perspective. If you go from 2000 to 9, the market's up about a 1.5% a year. That's really nothing. I mean, historically, what do we average in the stock market? 8 to 10% a year?
That's
if
correct.
You go over a long period of time?
That's correct.
Yeah, so 1.5%. We're just back to square one. Maybe a little ahead of square one, but not much. Now, if you see what happened since 2009 up until now, say, oh, my God, it is a massive run. But it is. It is a massive run. But if you look how quickly it went from the top to the bottom, it's not that far out of line. But what it doesn't mean is that we're going to start seeing the 8 to 10% of growth again in the stock market. I don't think we're going to see that anytime soon. And for the reasons we stated before, the economy just isn't strong enough to sustain this type of level.
So, you know, that leads me to, you know, we don't have a lot of great growth. We do have a lot of government restrictions, policies, regulations that are really weighing down the overall economy. I don't see the entrepreneur growing up anymore. I don't see somebody's going to go into the tool and die business. Obviously, that's the horse and buggy right now. But into a business like that, I no longer see those opportunities out there because there's too many things in between getting to the business and getting the money to help get your business. How does that, how do we fix it, or is it fixable?
Well, you know, you touched on it, but this is probably going to be one of the most difficult things to do. There's so much regulation, so many hoops to jump through, that it is difficult to start these new businesses. You might have a great idea, and you might have a good plan, but then you start running into all this red tape. It becomes, okay, well, what? I can't do this by myself, and there's nobody else to join you. So until the government gets out of its own way and says, hey, we got to let people do things that are going to be productive for society, it's going to be very difficult for that entrepreneurship to surface.
You know, and you know what I find to be interesting is, you know, I start to see, you see some of these small shopping malls, which are usually owned by little independents, right? I mean, you know, you get an anchor store, which is a corporate store, but then they get all these little independents who try to go into business. And of course, I don't know about by you in your neighborhood, but out here, there's more empty than are full.
Well, you know, that's actually kind of surprising in my area. They held up well, surprisingly so. I live in Orland Park, southwest suburbs of Chicago, and it's not an affluent suburb by any means. It's not a poor suburb either. But, you know, some of the smaller shops went out of business, but for the most part, they were able to hold on. And a lot of it has to do with the friendliness of the village and willing to cooperate with people to keep their businesses running efficiently. Now, they didn't make as much money as they have in the past just because of the general downturn. But I agree with you. When I drive around, I drive to my brother's house who lives in the city. I see strip mall after strip mall with maybe one or two of the 6 to 8 units occupied.
So, I mean, how do we fix that? How do we make it better? I mean, what are some of the things you're thinking about that would make it better? What are the region has to do? I mean, what does the government have to do? What do the cities have to do? How do we make it better?
Well, first off, the government's got to get out of the way. I don't see that happening. Probably more importantly is and this goes in with the government too, the economy's got to start growing on a sustainable business, not just here in the U.S., but across the world. And once that starts happening and you get people a little bit more willing to spend because their confidence level is up, then you'll start seeing these things bloom again.
Yeah, because it's concerning. And one of the things I want to talk to you about when we come back, but I want you to think about, A, we talked about regulations, but the way government is run today. Okay, I'm going to give you a couple of things to think about because it's a long break. So, and also, you know, we've had this big debate about minimum wage. I want to know where you stand on minimum wage, because I think these are things that may not necessarily drive the stock market, but they will certainly drive the economy. And I think that these are problems that need to be addressed that we've kind of let slip off. But of course, our current government, and not just Obama, but our current government has not really addressed what I think are the more serious issues, which I want to talk with you when we come back. This is The Bubba Show. I am with Dan Stussage from Athena Private Wealth. Reach out to him. Great guy, good friend of mine, 847-299-8877. That's Dan Stussage, Athena Private Wealth. This is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We're going to step out here for a break, and we'll be right back with more from Dan right after the break. Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with my man, the big angry redhead, Dan Stussage from Athena Private Wealth, 847-299-8877. Reach out to him. Again, he's willing to look at your portfolio and give you some general advice to put you in the right direction. And Dan will tell you himself, it may not be with him, but it's important that you have somebody help you devise your portfolio and make sure that you're doing the right things. So, Dan, we got a mess, right? We got a government that is a joke. I mean, I think the United States of America, the greatest country in the world, which should be the greatest company in the world, United States of Corporation, I think that our current administration has really tried to take the business out of running a business and really putting this into a bad way, especially with this big hype of minimum wage. What do you think?
Well, you know what? As far as what the government's been doing, you can't make our country a giveaway society. People have to work, and they feel good when they work and make their own deal. Before we left for break, you were talking about the government, which we both agree is pretty much in a mess, and the minimum wage. And that's going to be one of the themes in the 2016 election. And it's going to be this class warfare thing against like, oh, the rich don't want people having their minimum wage increased. And the reality is, you know, that sounds all fine and dandy. Of course I want to make $16 an hour. But who's going to pay for that $16 an hour? And you're starting to see what will happen when they if they try to get away with this. That money comes from somebody. It's going to come from you and me. It's going to come from the people that own these businesses that can't afford these businesses anymore because they can't sustain the prices to allow a wage that high. And just for example, I saw an article recently, and you've probably seen them yourself, about McDonald's using an automated service or an automated stand to place your order. You don't think that's going to happen all over the place? We'll be lucky to see anybody behind a cash register. And despite the fact it's a low-paying job, it is a wage-paying job. As a matter of fact, before we got on air here, I went to CVS. There was not one cash register manned by a person. Every one of them was one of the automatic kiosks that you had to go through. What do you think they're looking at down the line?
Well, I think if you keep pricing business out, I mean, you know, let's take a company, let's take, forget McDonald's, but let's take a restaurant like McDonald's, but it's independently owned by you. You and me own a restaurant together. We're partners, okay? We've got a McDonald's. We do a nice business. We've got 15 employees that we're open, you know, 12 hours a day, 7 days a week. We're open 84 hours a week. We need at least 6 coverage, okay, per shift to handle our business. And I'm paying right now, I'm paying, let's say, $9.50. I'm paying a little bit more than minimum wage because I want to take care of my employees. But now you're telling me that I have 84 hours times 12. So I've got 1,000 hours a week in man hours. And you're telling me that I'm going to now have to pay $6 an hour more. Okay. Well, what do you think I'm going to do? I got a couple of choices. I'm going out of business or I'm getting something cheaper. So I'm not going to employ the people. I'm going to do the same thing as the big corporations have done over the last few years. And what have they done, Dan? They go, you know what? Work harder. You don't want the job? We'll get somebody. There's a lot of people who want a job at Schlumberger or that type of company. There's a lot of employees out there that aren't working. So if they want to, you know, now cost a small business guy $6,000 a week because they've got to raise minimum wage, what do you think is going to happen to this country?
Well, it's absolutely going to happen. And, you know, the other thing to remember about a minimum wage job is, Todd, you and I are about the same age. You probably worked at McDonald's or a grocery store.
Brown's fried chicken, baby.
Yeah, and did you figure that was going to be your career choice? No, absolutely not. You have a bigger plan, whatever it may be. When I was in high school, I thought I was going to be a body and fender man. I didn't have any aspirations to go to college, but so I did that. I ended up going to college, but the fact is that wasn't my goal when I was working at McDonald's or working at Farmland Foods to make $1.80 an hour for the rest of my life. No, I was going to do something bigger and better, and what that requires is drive. You start giving people things for nothing, what's the point of going out and working harder and trying to better yourself?
No, I agree. And again, but a lot of people, see, here's my whole contention. I get your point, and we know in a perfect world that everybody wants, you know, not everybody, but most people have an aspiration to do better and you know, you want to be better than your family. And, you know, every generation wants to try to improve on the generation before. But unfortunately, we have not been creating a lot of those better jobs. So even though you have aspirations to go to a better job, they have not really been created yet. Because the problem is, as you mentioned, our age, there's a lot of guys our age that are really unemployable other than a minimum wage job because they're not educated. There's no longer a need for tool and die workers and guys like that, right? So how do we get around that part, and how do we get through the next, you know, 15 or 20 years while these guys are weeding themselves out of the system while we're moving into the technology age, when you've got government regulations that are squeezing the nuts off of every business owner and enforcing major corporations to want to leave the United States of America?
Well, you know, you're hitting the nail on the head all over the place here. And the reality is we really have to let companies give them the freedom to be productive and to be creative. And, you know, that's not to say you can't have regulations, because you do have to keep things in check. You can't have silly regulations saying, okay, you got to pay this person that, or you got to do this, or you got to do that. And there's far too much of that. We're just adding to it and adding to it. It doesn't seem like we're ever stepping back and saying, hey, you know what? Maybe simpler is better.
Well, I'm from the generation pay for play. You know, if you're good, you pay them more. If they're not good, you pay what you have to. And if you got somebody who's really good and you want them to stay, you pay them more. I mean, that's what I'm from. I'm not from all this. Now, I do agree that at the time unions came out, they were a great deal, and we needed unions back in those days. But I think unions have also kind of priced themselves out of the market, which is what's forced so much of our stuff to go overseas. What do you think?
Well, no, and again, that's true. I mean, companies are doing everything they can to get away from the unions because the unions' demands sometimes become reasonable. So what else are they going to do? They're going to find a way around it. The auto companies are a good example. Rather than stay up in Michigan, they open out in the southern states and away from where the unions were a part of it. And the wages down there are still decent, but they're not outrageous, and they're not bringing companies down. That's not just the American companies. That's the Japanese companies, the German companies, all of them. They're looking for a way to pay a fair wage and make a decent amount of money. And with the government keep jumping in and saying, no, you can't do this, it's going to stifle innovation.
And that's there, my boy, is my whole point why I'm distressed. Listen, again, I say it often. I love the United States of America. It's the best place in the world. I wouldn't want to live anywhere else. I have a problem with our president, and not because of he's a Democrat, but because he promised certain things, and he has yet to deliver on one promise of what he said he was going to do. And unfortunately, he only knows how to interpret things out of a book, which I think is also a problem. What do you think?
Absolutely. You know, they always talk about him being the smartest guy in the room. First off, I don't believe that. And secondly, the smartest guy in the room isn't always the best guy to have in charge, and that's clearly the case here.
Well, Ronald Reagan proved that, right? I mean,
absolutely.
You know, Bonzo goes to college, but you know what? It is all about running a business, and that's one of the things I always have a problem with. But Dan, tell us a little bit more about Athena Private Wealth. You got about a minute or so to give us a good rundown of Athena and how people get a hold of you.
Well, you know what? The best way of doing this is just get a hold of our website. That way you can get a good variety of the different things we offer, our phone numbers, anything you need down there. Call us if you feel comfortable. But given the investing environment we're in now, it's really, really a tough thing to navigate. Todd and I are always trying to figure out what the next thing is going to happen, and we have a decent call on it, but we don't have a great call. And we rely on each other as well as other people. That's what everybody needs to do, because you end up getting your own personal bias when you're buying a stock, a commodity, anything, and you're not looking at the bigger picture necessarily. You want somebody else to say, hey, you're doing this right, or here might be a better way of doing it. We think we can help you at Athena doing that. Please give us a call.
And I agree with Dan. And Dan, it's always great to have you on, and I love watching you on TV. You know, Dan and I text back and forth when one of them is on, and we, you know, give needles while you're on air. And of course, him and I are both sick enough to look at the text in between talking. Yeah, you know, Dan, it's great to have you on, man. And make sure you check out Dan's message, the big angry boy, big angry redhead, they call him, from Athena Private Wealth. Check out their website. I encourage you to do so. Again, he's telling you that it's simply, it might be able to help you. If not, they'll try to steer you in the right direction. I mean, that's what it's all about. This has been The Bubba Show. I have been with Dan Stesich today. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Same time, same station, The Bubba Show. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.